Hello everyone and welcome to episode 592 of So You Want to Be a Writer, the podcast that's all about writing and publishing. My name's Valerie Koo. I'm CEO of the Australian Writers' Centre, the world's leading centre for writing courses, and I'm your host. What have you been up to this week? I have been really busy with overseas visitors. I mean, they all seemed to kind of arrive at once, but that's okay because it was great to be able to catch up with family from overseas, mainly coming over from the UK. I'm hoping they will all move back here at some point, but for now, I have to be happy with short visits every couple of years. So there's been lots of get-togethers, hanging out, socialising, that kind of thing. Now, while I have loved every minute of it, I have to admit I'm kind of ready to crawl back into my cozy cave and hibernate for a little bit so that I don't have to get into the car or battle the traffic for ages and talk to, you know, a million other people who are also wanting to hang out with overseas visitors. Also, if you've been following along on my own personal social media, I'm right in the middle of the 100-Day Project. Now, if you're not familiar with this, it's a global movement where creatives commit to 100 days of creating. It's free, like NaNoWriMo, and if you're not familiar with NaNoWriMo, that's short for National Novel Writing Month. It's not till November, though. So for the whole month of November, everyone commits to attempt to reach 50,000 words. That's 1,667 words per day, and it's very specific to getting to 50,000 words in the month of November. But if you don't want to wait that long, I'm doing the 100-Day Project. Now, it's a bit broader. It's you can do any creative pursuit, so you can write, you can draw, you can paint, you can make something, whatever, as long as you create for 100 days. And when I mentioned this on social media, there were a few other creatives who said, yeah, I'll do it along with you. And that's kind of fun because you're all doing something at the same time. Now, I did this back in 2021 and it was so beneficial. So I figured, you know, why say no to taking part in a good thing? And I decided, yeah, to do it again this year. My focus is actually going to be on surface design and creating new patterns. So I'm excited about what may transpire with that. Now, if you're new to this podcast, you're wondering why in the world I'm doing that. You may not know that in addition to being a writer, I'm also an artist and surface designer. Now, while some of my friends are focusing on writing for the 100-Day Project, I'm focusing on surface design at this stage. And surface design is basically designing patterns. I design patterns for fabric, upholstery, wallpaper, and so on. My latest wallpaper collection is at Bunnings, throughout Bunnings in Australia, and I love designing these sorts of things in between my writing and editing projects, which is what I do on a daily basis, of course. I'm a big believer that you don't have to just follow one creative pursuit. If you're genuinely interested in some other creative medium, yeah, go explore it. Or if you're interested in multiple genres with writing, go explore that. I was just on a Zoom with a fabulous creative and we were talking about this and we were both kind of over that advice that you have to stick to just one thing, because honestly, if you're genuinely interested in something, then that is your soul telling you that there's something there to go explore it. And it can only benefit you in terms of all your other areas of creativity. Oh, and oh yes, I wanted to let you know about a fantastic free event that I'm putting on for you guys. This is totally free. It's an online event and it is creative coaching via Zoom on Thursday, the 14th of March. Myself and Pamela Freeman will be hosting this event. And Pamela, of course, is author of more than 40 books. She has written in so many genres under multiple names. And she is also director of creative writing at the Australian Writers' Centre. This event is called How to Be a Successful Writer, Even If You Have No Idea Where to Start. So it's on Thursday, the 14th of March, online via Zoom. You just need to register, though. It's from 7:30 to 8:30 Sydney, Melbourne time. And you register at writerscentre.com.au/creativecoaching, because it's a creative coaching event. So the writerscentre.com.au/creativecoaching. and it is completely free. And you're going to want to register and you're going to want to turn up because I'm going to have a fantastic surprise for you during the session that will be definitely worth you attending for. Now let's welcome back Nat Newman, who's going to share her writing tip with us this week. But of course, I just want to ask Nat a question first. Now, regular listeners will know that Nat does 1 million things. Apart from being a creative writing tutor at the Australian Writers' Centre, she also writes plays, acts in them, learns, I don't know, multiple languages, learns instruments. She does a million things. Now, I thought I did a million things, but Nat does 2 million things, I guess. So one question that I have for Nat before we get into the writing tip is, how do you maintain your energy? Because I know you pack a lot into a day and you wake up pretty early and you just do a lot. How do you go from one thing to the other and maintain a certain level of energy?
Huh. You know, I don't know. I think you just, transitions, I guess, are important.
Transitions?
Yeah. So when I move from, say, music to normally I do an hour of music and then I go to the gym. So, yeah, there's that couple of minutes where you're transitioning from one sort of thing into another. And, you know, at least that's an easy one. As I'm transitioning there, I'm getting changed, I'm packing my gym bag, and I'm just thinking about the next thing that I'm doing. So, yeah, I don't really think about energy levels. It's not like, oh, gosh, I'm exhausted after, you know, playing music for an hour. You just sort of go, okay, what is the next thing on the list? And I guess I'm a bit relentless. I just move forward. So I don't really think about, don't get me wrong, I'm knackered by the time, 10 o'clock rolls around and I get into bed and do some reading, but yeah.
Okay, I'll ask you a different question because I will admit that I asked you that question because people used to ask me that question and I had a similar answer. So I don't know why I thought you would have a different answer because I just never thought about it. I didn't feel like I really lacked energy. You know, it was just there. So my question then to you then is, what is your health routine? You know what I mean? What do you do to maintain a certain level of fitness or regular exercise, that kind of thing? Because often as writers, we can be a lot more inactive and a lot more sedentary. And I used to be a lot more active. And in the last couple of years, I guess COVID did it. I kind of slowed down a little and I need to get back into things. So yeah, describe to us your health routine, so to speak, to keep yourself, going.
Okay. Well, so I do strength training 4 days a week. I do mobility 7 days a week and I do core 7 days a week and I do cardio 3 days a week, which doesn't mean anything to anybody, but basically I lift heavy things. I do make sure to do, I think mobility, you might call it like, I don't say yoga because it's not always yoga. It might be any sort of stretching that you do I think it's really important. And I get it. Like as a writer, I think you can forget to love your body, but it's the only one you've got. So just taking 15 minutes out every day to actually do some mindful stretching, and it doesn't have to be yoga, it can be anything. Find an influence you like on TikTok or Instagram or whatever people use these
actually,
days.
Actually, I have one, yes. The name of her book, it's just a newly released book, escapes me, but her name is Lizzie Williamson. And basically, this is ideal for writers because her book is all about what you can do just as part of your day. So if you're in an office or if you're at a desk or if you're on the bus or you know what I mean? So you don't have to necessarily go to a gym. So it's about the exercises and the movements that you can do just throughout the course of your day while you're in the kitchen, while you're waiting for the microwave, that kind of thing. So yeah, Lizzie Williamson, everyone, not sponsored.
Right. Yeah, no, I really love that because the other thing, I'm in the gym 4 days a week and I'm a fairly small woman. And I'm in there with all these big bro dudes and they'll be lifting massive kilos. Obviously I'm never going to be able to lift like Chris Hemsworth, but I lift what I can, and I see all these guys, and between sets they're all just looking on Instagram or whatever for 2-3 minutes, Whereas I'm there stretching, like, you know, if I'm waiting a minute and a half between sets, like why look at Instagram? Why not actually, you know, use your body, move your body? I just think there's something in that. But yeah, definitely stretching is a really, really big thing. I remember that that Alison Tate, who used to host on the podcast, she hated yoga. She often said how much she hated yoga. And I think that's a common thing. I think people really dislike it, or Pilates or whatever. So yeah, just pick your Lizzie Williamson instead. You know what's really boring though, Valerie? Getting enough good food, honestly.
Eating
well, that's where you get your real energy. Like if you're eating nothing but junk food, you are gonna have you're gonna spike and then you're gonna crash, you know? So and if you're having too much coffee, if you're having too much tea, and I know it's really boring, but you know, eat well and you can do almost anything, really.
Yeah, it's a thing. I think often as creatives, we just don't think that that's an important part because we're not tradies, right? We're not lifting things. We're not on roofs. We're not whatever. We think that it's actually okay, but it is so important to look after yourself or you end up with, you know, stiffness, you end up with sore backs, you end up with RSI in your hands if you're typing a lot. Okay, great. So let's move on to our writing tip this week.
Yeah. So one thing that comes up that I hear a lot is people always hear this advice that they should write every day. And look, it's not bad advice. If you can write every day, go right ahead. Go nuts. Definitely write every day. I try to start my day with writing, but then you know what? Sometimes I'm too busy. I've got a big project on, I've got a big deadline, and I can't, you know, I can't fit my journaling in the morning, or I can't work on my novel that day. And you just don't stress about it. You've just got to go, okay, didn't work today, so that's fine. So I think the advice to write daily is good advice, and it's certainly well-intentioned advice. But if it's not for you, it's not for you, you know. So if you're working on a novel, definitely try. I think it's Pamela Freeman says that if you're not, even if you can't write every day, you should at least be thinking about your novel every day. And so what that might look like, because I was thinking, what's a practical example of that? I very much like practical examples. So let's say you're stuck in traffic. That's an ideal opportunity to think, what would my character Bruce do if he were stuck in this traffic right now? How would he react? And playing those sorts of little thought experiments, you know, that's you thinking about your character. So it can be as little as that. And then when you get home, that may spark something that then prompts you to write something.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, you're not, even though you're not writing every day, you're thinking about your story every day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I think, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago about sometimes we use some of these things as procrastination. And I think what can happen is it's like on Duolingo or any of those apps, you get addicted to the streak, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, wow, I wrote every single day in January. I'm amazing. and then, you know, maybe it gets to the middle of February and you've stopped writing, and then it gets to the beginning of March and you don't start because you think, well, you know, I had that streak and it's not worth starting again. Forget the streak. like don't use, oh, I can't write every day as some sort of procrastination device. Be honest with yourself and be realistic as well. If you can only write three times a week, only write three times a week. That's fine. You know, you don't have to write every day.
Have realistic goals. So one of the things, one of the apps I've been using is Habit Share. It's called. So for certain things like my kettlebells, I'm trying to do that every day, right? It's because I need to get a bit more active. And so you can write down seven times a week. But for other things, like if you know that you can only write three times a week, you can put three. So three times a week, and you record it. It's got a different line for each of the habits that you want to create so that you can see whether you've achieved your three times a week or seven times a week or whatever. And the great thing is, let's say I wanted to be accountable, I can share it with you so that we see each other's habits and, you know, where we're at kind of thing. Yeah. So that's useful for people who love accountability. And if you can be realistic in the number that you put in there, right?
Yeah.
Habit Share, everyone, in case you're interested.
Yeah, cool. I'll check that one out. Look at you sharing an app with me.
I know, right?
The tables have turned, Valerie.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the writing tip this week, Nat.
All right. Thanks a lot, Valerie.
Now let's move on to the giveaway that I have for you this week. I have three copies of Shadows of Truth by Astrid Schultz to give away. She is also author of League of Liars and Four Dead Queens, among others. You can meet her on episodes 476 and 280 of our podcast. This is very exciting for me because Astrid has just gone from strength to strength. She is a graduate of the Australian Writers Centre and she burst onto the scene with her debut novel, Four Dead Queens, and then just kept on going. So this is her latest novel, Shadows of Truth. It is the sequel to League of Liars, which we spoke about last time. Secrets abound, suspense builds, and revelations unfold about what lies beyond the veil. Filled with magic, mysteries, and adventures, this sequel puts the League to the ultimate test. So here's the blurb. After their dramatic escape from Vardin prison, Cader and his friends leap into the unknown, tumbling headlong out of Tallinn and into the strange and mysterious world beyond the veil. Lita, who grew up believing a world of dark fairy tales existed on the other side of the veil, finds that the truth is more magical and terrifying than she could have ever imagined, and it's the worst possible place to discover your boyfriend has been mortally wounded. Meanwhile, Cader and Eleonora learn that both this world and their own are teetering on the brink of destruction. Still reeling from Eleonora's betrayal, Cader must overcome his feelings and work with her to prevent an apocalypse. They have to make it home, and to do so, they will need the help of their old enemy, Dr. Buter, as well as old friends they thought were lost forever. This page-turning sequel to League of Liars takes us beneath the surface of the world of Tallinn and into the shadowy realm that is the source of both its magic and its nightmares. So Astrid Schultz has done a fantastic job with this novel. Everyone, check it out. You can win one of three copies of Shadows of Truth. Just go to writerscentre.com.au/win and follow the instructions. I've made it super easy for you to enter and potentially win. That's writerscentre.com.au/win. Entries close on the 11th of March. And now, are you ready for the word of the week? Well, I hope you are, because the word of the week this week is abnegate. That's A-B-N-E-G-A-T-E, abnegate. It sounds very similar to abdicate, which means to specifically renounce a throne or a crown, like what the Queen of Denmark recently did. But abnegate is to refuse or deny something to yourself, or reject or renounce. Now, in my searches to find out more about this word, I discovered that in the Divergent series by American author Veronica Roth, who's been on this podcast, there is a faction called Abnegation, and the people of that faction are, of course, selfless. There you go, abnegate. And that was the word of the week. This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Writers' Centre and our popular course, Creative Writing Stage 1. This course is the perfect way to unlock your creativity and explore the world of writing. You'll learn how to create memorable characters, believable dialogue, and captivating plots, all in a supportive environment in this 5-week online course with your very own tutor giving you personal feedback each week. Here's what Joanna Nell had to say.
It almost sounds a little bit melodramatic to say, but discovering the courses at the Australian Writers really did actually change my life. Through discovering writing, I have completely had a new career. I must admit that I feel a much more sort of fulfilled and balanced person as a result of that, finding a channel for that creativity. The Creative Writing Stage 1 course was exactly the approach that I needed, that sort of nuts and bolts, step-by-step approach. One of the things I found the most useful in the course was actually also one of the most terrifying at the start, which was giving and receiving of critique. It really is a very important way that a writer can improve. The other great aspects of being a member of the Australian Writers' Centre is that sense of community. Finding people who are like-minded, your people, your tribe. I'm the author of The Single Ladies of Jacaranda Retirement Village, which is my debut novel. And so really it was completely a dream come true. Often meet many people who say that they would like to write a book but don't know where to start, or they have a story but they don't have the time to do it. And I think that this is where somewhere like the Australian Writers' Centre can really show them the way to do it, and it certainly did for me. And I think I'm, you know, living proof of what they can achieve.
If you'd like to find out more, go to writerscentre.com.au/creative-writing. Now let's move on to our writer in residence this week. Corina May's latest novel is Never Ever Forever. She's also published her rom-com Duck a l'Orange for Breakfast with Pan McMillan. Corina is a former magazine journalist turned digital marketer. She's an avid reader and writer of lively love stories that span the globe. I wanted to talk to Corina about her journey of publishing 3 books in 15 months, but also, I mean, one of the things that Corina really understands is the power of an author brand, and I wanted to unpack some of her advice and strategies on that and how that's helped her with her author career. Thanks so much for joining us today, Corina.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Val.
Well, of course, because you're one of my favourite rom-com authors, and you've got your next book out, Never Ever Forever. For listeners who haven't got their hands on a copy yet, tell us what it's about.
So Never Ever Forever centers around a lovable protagonist, Rosie Royce, who we meet. She's going through a bit of a slump in her life. She is over her city agency job and dating city F-boys. So when a career change opens up in the idyllic wine country town of Mudgee, she decides it's maybe time for a tree change and maybe her luck will change. So she packs up and moves for a local community radio job in the hopes that maybe she might finally get lucky in love and meet one of those kind-hearted farmers that she has seen on television. But instead of one of those kind-hearted farmers, she is paired with the infuriating Dr. Marcus Abrams, her co-host at the local radio station, and he's also a bit of a celebrity in town. And then to make matters worse, her ex-boyfriend, the high school sweetheart who broke her heart 6 years ago, comes back into her life. And the story travels from Mudgee to Mumbai in my typical Wanderlust fashion. Rosie is kind of discovering that true love might not look the way that she thought it looked.
And where did this idea come from?
I think this story in particular started with the character Rosie Royce. She's been buzzing around in my head probably for about a decade, and she's taken on a lot of different forms. But what has remained, I think, which is still in the story, is her passionate, never say die attitude. She always had a lot to say. And in the story of Never Ever Forever, it's kind of the thing that ends up getting her in trouble at her agency job. But then it's the thing that makes her so brilliant at her new job in radio, where she is a bit of a truth seeker and always kind of interrogating maybe some people's lives at expense of interrogating what's going on with her. It's definitely centered around Rosie, to the point where sometimes I just call the book Rosie, even though it's forever. She's a very strong character.
Okay, so last time you were on the podcast was for Duck a l'Orange for Breakfast, and you've had a big year since then, so there's a lot that has happened. So what I'd actually like to talk about, because we did talk about your writing process and stuff like that in the previous, in that episode, so listeners, you can go back and have a listen to that. But now that you've had a year or 15 months as a full-blown author, starting from, well, not being one, to now having 3 novels published in 15 months, I would actually love to talk to you about some of the lessons you've learned along the way and some of the, I guess, unexpected things. And that's where I'd like to start. What have been some of the things that have made you go, oh, I wasn't expecting that, or that's not what I thought it would be?
I think what is involved in being an author, so writing is only one part of it, and then there's the business of writing. So what I learned particularly was even being traditionally published, and you typically are assigned like a marketing team and a publicist, and they're amazing at what they do, but obviously you're your own brand effectively, and you know your story best. So there's a lot of work and hours, I think, that go into supporting the efforts of the traditional publishing team. So I kind of was a bit surprised, really, like in the pre-launch stuff, there's, you know, amazing podcasts like this one, and articles, a lot of op-ed pieces. So I was a little bit surprised about how much time that would kind of carve into like my writing time. So that was probably the biggest surprise, the business of writing, which I'd heard about, but I think it was something different to experience. At some points I felt like I was playing a game of whack-a-mole, which means that obviously my publicist was doing an amazing job, but one request would come in to answer these questions and then another one would come in. So I think just understanding the juggle of that, and what's, you know, I'm still working in my digital marketing job part-time. So what's those hours, what's writing hours, and now what hours are allocated to the business of writing? Yeah, and I guess also how collaborative it is. So initially, I guess I was wanting to be a perfect author, so I was waiting to be asked things. And along the journey, so the last 15 months, I now realize that, you know, I can come to the party with my own networks. I've, you know, attended Australian Writers' Centre in 2014. So I've definitely, you know, been part of the writing world, especially in Sydney, for a long time. So I didn't even think about the connections and, yeah, the networks that I could bring to the table, and I could work collaboratively with the publisher. So that's something that I guess I wish that I had done earlier, but now know that that's something that they welcome. And it obviously only makes the sales campaign and selling the book stronger.
Now, you have a background, as you say, you have a part-time job in digital marketing. And what's apparent to me in certainly your digital presence is that you understand branding. As you say, you are your own brand, right? I love it. But there's not everyone has that background, or even gets the things that may come to you naturally and intuitively, but you really get it. So as I'm recording this, I am looking at Karina on Zoom, and she's holding up her fingernails, and they are the same color as her book cover, which I absolutely love. So that's taking branding to the nth degree, perhaps. But if you can try and put yourself into the shoes of somebody who has no idea or very little idea, who hasn't got your background, mm-hmm. and what sort of things would you say they would need to do to, you know, really reinforce their brand online, well, whether it's online or not, but yeah, to reinforce their brand of themselves as the author, as an author, and also their latest book?
I think it's funny because I think the word authenticity is probably overused, so maybe genuine. So I think really understanding like what it is that you do is firstly important. So before I even started pitching my work, I had a tagline, lively love stories for Wanderlusters, or sometimes I say for those who travel the globe, because I always knew that my stories were going to have fun, lively characters and always include an element of travel. And that's because that's what I grew up on. Chick Lit and Sophie Kinsella, they always went somewhere. So for me, I knew that what I did when I wrote was joyous, and I wanted to write what I enjoyed reading and make people feel that way, which was warm and fuzzy and joyful. My covers are bright and cute and colorful. So I think I really knew what it was from the get-go that I had to offer. And so knowing that really helps with the kind of content that I'm producing in social media, or I've got a newsletter called Wonder Love. So that obviously combines the rom-com genre and then the Wanderlust aspect of my writing. I mean, I also have a digital marketing background, so I can't help but know about things called content pillars, where you're basically, you know, dividing up different types of content by theme. So I'm very aware that the sales part, so the actual here's my book, buy my book, is very important, because that's, you know, directly where people are going to find how to purchase your book. But equally so, they're not buying a product, they're buying from a person. So I just always knew that I wanted to make sure that people knew who I was. And it's great because, you know, I'm not writing crime, so I can really closely link myself to the rom-com stories and say, this is where I've traveled, this is what I do on the weekends. So I think bringing the personal element of my life, which does happen to tie nicely into writing, is really helpful for showcasing not what my work is, but like who I am as a person, because I think people buy from people. And the storytelling aspect, I think every time, you know, I'm online and I'm sharing something, I'm thinking that people are getting to know how I am as a storyteller, which is effectively also what's in my book. So just thinking organically and naturally how to link what my book is and who I am as a person. But I definitely don't sit there and map out everything. I think that's good for my digital marketing job, but I like to kind of, I know obviously intrinsically what points I need to hit, but I don't think it would come across as authentic if I was mapping everything out to a T.
But I love that you want people to know you as a person, but also the themes, the wanderlust and the love, that makes perfect sense for you. And that is something that people can really associate you with. But how about a lot of digital marketing is visual? Right? You know, Instagram, whatever, websites, that sort of thing. So, and again, this might just come naturally to you, but I would love your take on it, because I think, you know, you come from it from a professional background in it as well. Just is something as straightforward as photos or how you appear in photos. There's a consistency in what you put out there with what you do in terms of your photos. Mm. What's your advice, say, to other authors? Because sometimes I see other authors post shots and, yeah, they're authentic, but there's also, oh, my God, brush your hair, you know. That might sound a bit mean. But
no, I know. I mean, it's helpful because I personally love aesthetics. Like, I've always loved pretty things. And, again, that goes really well with rom-coms. So I am someone that, you know, didn't have to get a full new wardrobe for my book stuff. I already liked to wear pretty things. But I will say, like, I don't actually post absolutely everything. So I curate content quite a bit. So I think it's a balance of stopping and waiting. Not everything has to go up straight away, and thinking when I'm posting, I'm normally telling a story at the same time. Of course, there's those things that I want to get up straight away. Like, you know, my book has been picked for Apple Book of the Year or something like that. But I think I stop and wait a little bit. At the same time, I don't really resonate with people that look too perfect. So I think it's a balance of, at the end of the day, a lot of my days are juggling. So I'm, you know, working some hours in my digital marketing job. So where possible as well, I try and create that reality as well. So I do think I have a Canva subscription that's always worthwhile investing in, and I have some templates. You know, now with a traditional publisher, you do get in-house like marketing support, but often, you know, they've got lots of things to do. So that's an example of working collaboratively, because I have the skills, I'm able to jump in and help, or they might have already created a template and I simply ask if they can share it with me. And that's the other thing as well. I think a lot of authors don't realize that the marketing teams in-house are more than happy to share their advice. So if you're asking questions about, should I be posting X amount of times a day, or they're often really forthcoming with advice, because obviously you have the same goal, which is to sell more copies of your book. But yeah, I do, you know, it's easy. I don't know what I'd do if I get a cover that's orange or a cover that I'll deal with that when that happens. But so far, I've been really lucky as well with my book covers that they are the pastels and the pinks and just the sorts of colours that I wore naturally anyway. So I think a lot of it has been luck.
So, okay, you said you've got a Canva subscription, and a lot of people know what Canva is, but they don't necessarily know what you might how they might use it in their own digital marketing or their own brand building. What do you use Canva for example, in the templates that you're referring to?
Yeah, so I do think it's good for cohesiveness and also time saving, because if you create, so if I'm writing a template, maybe with another author endorsing my book or a Goodreads review, I mean, again, I do think that sometimes it's good just to screenshot the Goodreads review and put them up, because that shows, you know, that it's real. But then there's other cases where it's nice to have like a pretty designed template. And by using Canva, has this really handy magic resize tool. So once you have designed it for maybe like a square post, you can literally just click the magic resize and it will duplicate that design into different formats. So like story size, Facebook banners, and you have to, you know, jiggle things around a little bit because obviously the space changes, but it's so handy. So I think also having your brand color set up, I just, you know, designed my own website just using Squarespace and picked some colors that I liked. But then I imported those colors into Canva, and you can set up like a bit of a brand portfolio. And then again, it's as simple as just clicking the color. And I've done that again recently with that Rom-Com Pod, the podcast that I host with fellow romance author Claire Fletcher. And we have a separate Canva and we have the same thing kind of set up, and it just makes things streamlined and really easy. And I think a lot of the blocker for people sometimes is that content creation part. So it doesn't have to be, you know, complex. You can set it up so it's just really easy for you to do.
As you say, you kind of like aesthetics, and you have a Zoom background that is real, and it's your actual apartment. So you've chosen an angle in your apartment that's lovely and neat, and you know, also displays your books and stuff like that. Which I've interviewed thousands of authors in my day, and many don't necessarily understand the importance of that, because if it was a YouTube thumbnail or even just on Instagram reels or stories, people are more likely to look at it if it's not a crappy visual, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a nice visual, and you get that. What is your advice to authors in terms of that? Because people often like that, sometimes they're going, oh, I'm in the car, can we do the Zoom from here? Well, you know, what's your advice? You know, because increasingly authors are appearing on podcasts and on Instagram Lives or whatever. What's your advice on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is I still actually have to get a ring light. So that's something that's been on my to-do list. And every single time I watch something back and I think, oh gosh, it would look so much better with a ring light. So there's always things that you want to improve and tweak. And I do think you kind of have to just do the best with your environment. Like maybe you are going to pick up the kids or whatever is happening at that time. So sometimes those things happen, but where possible, like you are always, I guess, representing your brand. And so I've just always been super aware of that. And I know another huge pain point for people is showing their face on social media. So, you know, they might actually record something and then never distribute it because they're, you know, they don't like the way that they look. So firstly, you know, I don't always love the way that I look either, but I just can always override that with like, this is the best thing. Like I want to be a career author and I have to get out there, and this is what I just have to get over this. So it's obviously a lot better if I know that, you know, I've made an effort beforehand, and that's more likely a clip that I'm going to be happy to share. I do find that when I share, I think template content from Canva is great for certain circumstances, but I really don't think, and that goes back to me saying like people buy from people and humans, that you can really get away with talking about your book and selling your book without showing your face, which, you know, it is hard because I know that not everybody is comfortable doing that. So if you're more comfortable doing that, if you have your makeup done, then batching content is also a great thing to do. You can't obviously do that with scheduled interviews, but if you have a morning where you've gone to the hairdresser or you like the top you're wearing, you can you know, create quite a few reels or stories. Like most of my stories, I actually record days before I put them up. And part of that is a buffer for myself because I do still feel exposed. Like I'm often sharing kind of intimate details of, you know, how I'm feeling about the publishing process or something. And it can be confronting. I want to sit on that to make sure that I'm okay with sharing it. So I'll often not share my reels, but people don't know that. People don't know, you know, that I've sat on that content for a bit of time before I put it up and had that distance from it. So I've kind of just worked out the things that have stopped, that I've removed the blockers maybe for me. So it is different for everybody, but I do think like having a front-facing professional look is important.
I like that. Remove the blockers. That is a key thing, isn't it? Because there's always something that's stopping you. Figure out, be self-aware enough to figure out what that is and, remove it. Absolutely.
I realized because sometimes I'd watch it back and I maybe didn't say things perfectly, which you never do. But if I post it a few days' time, like later in the future, I can't even recall what I've said and I care less about it. I'm like, that's that up. So I realized that was a thing for me, that just having that distance between when I record and when I publish it. And again, you can use like a social media scheduler. So you can even forget that that's going out, right? So it's just set and forget. And that's good for lots of reasons, but it's also great for just kind of getting that thing done without physically, you feel very vulnerable. You do, like you said the right thing. Do I look the right way? Which is human nature. So whatever you can do to kind of prevent that.
And some people, I think the blocker is simply they're a bit embarrassed because their kids or spouse are around. So just make sure you do it when they're not around. You know what I mean? Remove that blocker. I think that's such an important thing to identify. Now let's come back to Never Ever Forever. Did you know what was going to happen or did you discover it?
I'm a plancer, so I think a little bit. So I
love
always
that. Plancer.
Like we took all orange for breakfast, I started with the title for this book. And a lot of the themes of the book are in the title, which is Never Ever Forever. So Rosie Royce is continually looking for the never ever. So that obstacle or that reason for her to say no to things. She's, you know, dealing with some wounds from childhood, which you know, are only made worse when her ex-boyfriend ups and leaves for her current boyfriend ups and leaves for London. And so from there, you know, she develops a defense mechanism. She wraps herself in that protective coating, and she's always looking for reasons for things not to work out for her. That's her narrative, which is the never evers are when we meet her in the first chapter, she's going on a Tinder date and, you know, the never ever is the guy's bald patch. So they can be superficial like that, or they can be bigger things. So I knew that that was what I wanted to tackle in this book. I think the plot kind of unfolded from there. I didn't know that I wanted to travel to India in this story. But I knew that I wanted Rosie to go somewhere that was really outside of her comfort zone, somewhere that she would never consider going. And I had been to India in 2009, and I do travel quite a lot, which is, you know, great for my stories and, a handy tax deduction at tax time. But I just picked India because for me, when I visited, it was one of those places where it was sensory overload and I was looking at something beautiful and smelling something disgusting. And it took me a full year when I got home from there to kind of process and worked out, if I enjoyed it. So I knew that I wanted Rosie to go somewhere that was like, you know, she thought that Mudgee was her changing it up and, you know, living a little, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone. So I wanted to put her somewhere there. So from there, I think the story just kind of unfolded with those key bits that I knew about Rosie as a character and I guess what I wanted her character arc to be. But there were certainly a lot of twists along the way that surprised me.
Now, this is book three, well, novel three, and presumably you're already writing or almost finished writing book four. Does writing get easier or for you?
Every book is different, but I think what I am doing is learning what people like about my story. So it was interesting when Duck came out, it was it coincided with me editing Never Ever Forever. So I really enjoyed, I mean, other people might be different, but as a digital marketer, I like transparency of data. And I really like that real-time feedback of starting to understand what people did enjoy about my stories and being able to put more of that into my books. So going into I think the quality of my books, someone described it to me as in one moment they're wearing glasses that they actually need to see, short-sightedness, and the next moment we're putting on rose-colored glasses to look at the world in kind of that, you know, romanticized wanderlust way. So it really straddles that realism of, you know, what's happening in day-to-day life, and then the big brush strokes of the beauty of the world, which I think is just actually how I personally see the world. So I think it's helped to be more conscious of that quality going into my next stories. I do still write for myself. I'm not writing for a market. Like I think that I would be, censoring myself too much if I was thinking about trends or what people wanted to read. But at the same time, I think it's nice to kind of get a better idea of what my readers enjoy and lean into that a bit more. So in that respect, but I think, you know, everyone says, all my author friends and listening to authors on this podcast, every book is different. So I think each time you wonder if you can do it again. But I've learned my process, which I think, you know, is helpful as well. So I know what comforts me, which is typically to get, you know, 15,000 words down like pretty quickly. And then I feel like I've got that foundation to kind of chip away at it. And I've done that now a few times and I'm like, okay, this must be my process. So my process is slowly, I guess, revealing itself, which is helpful.
That's great. And of course, everyone's process is different, right?
Everyone's different. Yeah.
You've got to try different things to work out the thing that's going to resonate with you. And, you know, one of the things that you did was that you did several courses at the Australian Writer Centre, including Novel Writing Essentials and Write Your Novel, and also the one about structural editing. And in each of those things, you learn different things that you try out, and then you work out, okay, well, that doesn't work for me, but that really does. And the only way, though, that people are going to do it, and you've done it so successfully, is actually to do it, because people just learn it and not necessarily apply it, and then you'll never learn the process that's right for you. So what is the plan now in terms of, you know, you've got a really good solid foundation in, I mean, it's more than a foundation for your author career. What's your plan in terms of the combo of digital marketing, you know, your other job and writing?
Yeah, so the goal is to hopefully continue scaling up the writing hours and scale down the digital marketing. So I've scaled down my marketing in 2022. I had gifted myself the year of creativity for my 40th birthday, just to see what would happen if I, you know, took myself seriously. I already had been taking myself seriously with writing, which is why I had done so many courses at the Australian Writer Centre. But I think I just still didn't allow myself the space. And I wrote a couple of intentions that year of protecting my peace and giving myself space for creativity. And it was amazing what happened. Obviously, the flow on from that was getting a 2-book deal. So since 2022, I have been working kind of half hours, 2023. So I'm going to be continuing that in 2024, with the goal of, hopefully making a full-time author career. But I don't also want to get ahead of myself. Like, I'm happy to build slowly and steadily. I'm hoping to, continue to put out. I mean, this year was exceptional with 2 books a year, but I think that pace is hard to sustain. So that 1 book a year, I know that I'm lucky my career also complements this journey really well. So I want to make sure that, you know, I'm staying up with the latest trends. So maybe it will be that I don't want to work full time and still do some digital marketing hours on the side, but the goal is definitely to have some more time to dedicate to my stories, because it's what I love doing and when I feel the happiest. And I guess I've seen the payoff. It sounds a bit crass, but what happens when you put attention somewhere and you, I've seen, like, what can happen. So I guess I just want more of it. I'm a bit of an addict now.
I love it. Well, 3 books in 15 months is pretty fantastic. Everyone, get yourself a copy of Never Ever Forever by Karina May. Thank you so much for your time today, Karina.
Thank you, Valerie.
I love chatting to Karina, and I love seeing where authors get to and what they learn after that first, you know, flush of their first novel, and then they get into the swing of the writing community to discover, you know, the highs, the lows, the pros and cons. So big thanks to Karina for sharing all of her insights. Now I'm going to leave you with this fun fact. The idiom to boot, as in, you know, something additional, for example, the new whiskey bar is a welcome refuge and has charming staff to boot, right? Okay, now to boot has nothing to do with footwear. Did you know that? In fact, it comes from the Middle English bote, B-O-T-A, meaning an advantage. So there you go. That's the origin of the phrase to boot. All right, now, if you're not connected with the podcast community on Facebook, it's free to join. Just search for So You Want to Be a Writer podcast community and request to join. Love to see you in there. Lots of different writers from all walks of life at, you know, emerging and established, and a few people in the industry in there as well. So it's a good place to connect. Also, feel free to connect with me on social media. I'm at Valerie Koo. I'm at Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and over at valeriekoo.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I look forward to chatting to you again next time. Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. You'll find the show notes at writercentre.com.au/podcast, or sign up for our awesome and often hilarious weekly newsletter at writercentre.com.au/news, where you'll find writing resources, giveaways, competitions, and much more.